Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SAB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. So just a reminder how to join us. We have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444 and just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702 or search for SFU On Call, Starfleet Universe On Call. And of course, we also co-broadcast over on the Twitch .tv website. So go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call if you want to watch it there instead. And the benefit of that is, of course, you get to see my lovely face. And everyone wants to see my lovely face, you know. But moving on, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, of course, you can follow sfuoncall. Also, I have a personal account called Paul Franz. Just a reminder that I'm passionate about being an Orioles fan, Catholic, and technology, all kinds of technology. I love it all. And, of course, I have a tertiary account called Franz Games if you want to keep an eye on what's going on when it comes to things like, oh, the online client, or maybe what's happened with Starfleet Warlord. Things like that. And, of course, this TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. When it comes to AB this week, it's been a quiet week. Maybe too quiet. We'll just have to wait and see next week. Obviously, it's the first week of the month, which means the possibility of Shapeways minis. So if you are a Shapeways fan, you will obviously be very interested in that. So definitely keep that in mind. And of course, this... moving on to the online client. Actually, there was a new one just released this week. That's version 4.4.1. Had to release a 0.1 release because there was an immediate issue mentioned. And I fixed it immediately to correct it for people. Some of those changes that I've talked about in the past. And just a reminder here of what those were. For FedCom, add support for gunboats. When it comes to Windows, fix the issue with right-clicking on pop-up, you know, to pop up the add piece window and then having the mouse kind of stuck so it keeps on scrolling around the map, you know, keeps on moving it around. Also, when it comes to FedCom had a very nasty issue, and this was due to the support for the Andromedans, and I didn't get it, and I completely apologize for that, and that is that if you drain your energy, total amount of energy to be below how much batteries you had, you blow the amount of energy that's in your batteries, it then would totally screw up the calculations on that because I automated the process, but I didn't hit every single part in the code so that it would work properly, and I apologize for not catching that one sooner. Also, I added, of course, the flat UI, which I showed off to you guys many, many moons ago at this point. Also, the chat log is now saved as part of the game. So just a reminder, that means the game files might get just a little bit larger. Okay, a lot larger. That's a possibility. So obviously keep an eye on that. If you have problems with loading games because of it, please tell me, and I'll see if there's something I can do to resolve the issue with that saved game file. Also, resolved an issue with local counters where if you actually were testing out a brand new ship that you generated, it would not load the local counters that you've also had specified. And also, one last thing that I think is kind of important, which was I can't believe I didn't do this before, and I'm surprised no one else ticked me. It didn't take me for this because, like, wait a minute. I think the reason why is because in the past, most gameplay was tournament, and these days, gameplay is moving much more towards fleet battles. You know, fleet battles are being the thing because we have I think at least have one, if not multiple campaigns running at the same time at SWB Online. So keep an eye out online for that because unfortunately, they haven't been telling me about who's playing and what kind of campaigns are being run. Because if they were, I would announce them and maybe even get more players. I'm not sure if they're interested in more players. It might be that they're not and that they're all full up and so forth. It's just they're quietly playing those campaigns on their own, which is fine. But I forgot to add an add round to the default drone library. And the thing is that if you don't add a drone round called add, weird, but called add, and you're using like a G-Rack or using an ad rack. Actually, it's a G-Rack in this case, the G-Rack. It should not happen with a regular ad rack because an ad rack is not... It's a specialized library for it, which has basically dogfight drones and ad racks. I mean, ad rounds. Well, the normal rounds didn't have it. And the G-Rack, well, that also can fire ad rounds. So, whoops, I forgot to add that one for the default drone library, and that's now added. So that will no longer be an issue. The problem was that it wasn't automatically removing the ad round from the G-Rack when you fired it as an ad. So that's now fixed. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it looks like you just got me. I was expecting Barry to show up, but obviously he was a little too tired for this evening. As he said, he was going to be here briefly, so I was like, okay, I thought we could do the one thing which he emailed me earlier about, which was second generation X-Ship rules. He had, you know, he's been playing around with that, and I know we've gone around it in the past, and I wanted to go around on the latest updates to those, but he's not here. So hopefully next week he'll be here, and we can then move forward with that. So, in its place, we will finish up what I wanted, which I started. I laid a lot of the groundwork last week, which is about play by email. And then after that, I got an idea for something forward just because of I was listening to Three Moves Ahead and they were talking about this one game. Please don't I do not remember off the top of my head what that game was. If you want me to, I can easily look it up. It just will take me a moment to look at my podcast app to look that up. But in any case, hey Iggy, hi Chris. They're in the chat room on Twitch, so if you want to watch my beautiful face and possibly my screen in the future, come on, join us on Twitch, you know. So anyway, moving back to one of the topics that I was going to have for this evening, and one of those topics that I was going to have for this evening is the discussion of can play by email be successful, not just be played, but be successful as a not opponent versus opponent, meaning, you know, human opponent against human opponent, because in my mind, that, because I've not seen many people discuss that at all. I mean, really, I had a game going for a few months, like 3 or 4 months, and then, you know, people got busy and they dropped, one of the guys dropped, and we couldn't continue. You know, it wasn't my fault, you know. Yes, I probably should have bugged them more. But at the same time, if a person gets busy in life and they aren't interested in playing it, what am I, you know, there's only so much I can personally do. But in any case, because and to me, that is the one thing that is makes it difficult. So the one thought I had, and this is a couple of weeks ago now, which was, what if We created an engine, because it's not, it wouldn't be just for, you know, it wouldn't be just for playing against that opponent, but also allow you to submit the orders to that opponent. And if you want to, obviously, the first to do this, in my mind, would be the first take on it. It would be a very slow process, which I would not expect anyone to really want to work on. But it, basically, it is a kind of idea of minimal viable product to a certain degree. I think it's below minimal viable product in that case, because of the big thing with that is that the first start of that would actually be the ability to submit turns, you know, and actually not submit turns, submit segments, you know. Obviously, the first one would not even check the rules. There's only so many rules that the computer can check anyway. So you have to assume that you're playing by the rules for the most part. But, you know, this one wouldn't even check to see if you got the speech right, if you're moving the proper impulse to start with. I mean, the beginning. Not so far that you've actually plotted it and so forth. But you've gotten to the point where, you know, you're just... The idea is that you do each part of the segments of the impulse. So that's the start of the test. That's where you start. And then you move on to a little more advanced. Well, I will pause that thought, because it seems like Barry actually showed up. Just, he was a little late. Hey, Barry, how you doing?
Hey there. Sorry about that. I've been busy on the phone all night.
Mm-hmm.
I was planning on working till noon tomorrow and then flying home for the weekend.
Right.
And then my boss called and said, we got a customer that called and they're very much in distress and they're in Atlanta and you're in Atlanta and we have nobody else that can take this. And help. Help.
Understood. Understood.
Canceled my... They're going to pay through the nose for it, so it's like, okay.
Oh, I understand. I'm just like, hey, it's a Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
So they're gonna pay through the nose.
So I may, yes, I may fly home Saturday. I don't know. But it may be Sunday, or if I don't. If it gets to be Sunday, I'm just probably not good. I canceled my... It's funny because I had two flights scheduled, a one-way to Harrisburg and a one-way from Baltimore. And I was, the one from Harrisburg to Atlanta was like $500, and from Baltimore to Atlanta was $200. So I was like, yeah.
Right.
I did it two one-ways, but that made it easier to cancel one segment.
Right.
And if I can fly home Saturday night, I'll do it. But if it gets to be Sunday, it's like, you know what? My other flight. It was funny because I was out of supplies, so I went shopping. And I'm on my way back to the hotel after shopping, and that's when they called. And it was kind of like I bought enough supply. Unfortunately, some of the supplies I bought were all perishable stuff. And on a timer, and it's like, oh crap, I'm not gonna be able to eat it all before I go home. Mm-hmm. And then this happens, like, oh, now I will be able to eat it all. that worked out well.
Yep, agreed. Agreed. That's good.
Yeah, I'm on a, I think I've told you before, I'm on a strange diet.
Yes. Definitely.
And I've lost, I'm losing 5 pounds a week. I mean, I lost the first 30 pounds, and then 1 week later, I had lost another 5. Usually after losing 30 pounds, the next 5 is, like, takes a long time. But you won't recognize me the next time.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking up some onions now.
Cool.
Oh, yes, I got to get the mushrooms. And the mushrooms and onions, and I have broccoli and cauliflower and carrots that I cooked up the other day. And then tomorrow I'm going to have mushrooms, onions, cauliflower, broccoli, carrots, garlic, olives, and then for dessert, sauerkraut. That'll be breakfast.
That's an interesting breakfast. Sauerkraut for breakfast.
But dessert and breakfast dessert. And then for lunch, I have a yam. Then I just run it in the microwave for a few minutes to soften it up. And other than that, I eat it raw. Skin and all. And then and then I have some nuts, like a half a cup of mixture of probably tomorrow I'm going to do pecans, walnuts, and Brazils.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be lunch. And then for dinner, I'll have a bed of leafy greens. And I've got a can of sardines, more olives, some artichoke hearts, and olive oil, vinegar, and an avocado. I might do the avocado for breakfast.
Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah.
Right. One quick thing to reply to the chat room. That is, I have not heard of any gaming conventions starting again yet, but I'm willing to bet. When is Council of Five Nations?
Gamers. I don't know about Council of Five Nations. That's usually October.
Right. Okay. And I'm willing to bet by that time,
yeah,
the gaming convention will be back for Starfleet, you know, SFB, FedCom stuff. Obviously, we have our smaller one, which we're going to have in September.
Yes.
Which is Gamers of Summer.
I've been vaccinated.
Hmm?
I've been vaccinated.
Oh, me too. So I'm sure. Yeah, we can play, but it's not going to be any larger tournament situation at there. I would love if people would you know come and we could start a tournament, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't expect people to do that. Oh, okay.
So did you see the update I made to the second gen rules?
Yes, that's one thing I actually wanted to discuss with you tonight.
Oh, okay.
And while you were talking, I was reviewing some of it. I had to remember go back for some of the rules previously, i.e. the one where it mentioned heat. I totally forgot that's one of the mechanisms that you added in the second generation X ships.
Oh, yeah. And boy, does it make it makes for some fun factors. Now, I've always had a problem with the cloaking device because I just didn't think it was done right.
Right. Though I have an issue with it, but we'll get to that.
Oh, certainly. I guarantee it was just a first attempt. Throw it at the wall, see if it sticks.
Right.
But in terms of the numbers, I guarantee you there's some balance issues.
I'm not even talking about the numbers, believe it or not, because the numbers don't look bad at the moment. Obviously, they'd have to be play tested and all that to make sure that things were. Chris, these second gen rules are not posted anywhere at the moment. Actually, when I do this, let's do this.
Feel free to post them.
Yeah,
I wrote them. You feel free to post.
There it is. Okay, this is the rules at the moment. Kidding me? Actually, let's do this a little bit. I want to blow this up so people can more easily read them at the moment. These aren't fully fleshed out. These are working rules that Barry created because of obviously ADB has been slow to do second generation rules.
They lasted it in 1983.
Understood. We've had this discussion in the past.
I think there's a little difference between slow and glacial.
Yes, Chris, a 64 impulse chart. It's as I said, it's interesting. There's certain things which I don't agree with. Though one of the things that came out, I saw that just came, popped, when it comes to things that I thought were a little bit wrong. Rule number three. If lock on is lost to a second generation ship, it becomes completely hidden and the counter is removed from the board.
Yes.
Now, here's the one thing.
It cannot be fired at.
Understood. Here's the problem I have with it. You're saying if it's not a second generation next ship, i.e. a first generation next ship, then it can easily see the ship. You're implicitly saying that.
That you can see the second gen X ship?
Yeah, you can send a second gen X ship with a first gen X ship.
Second gen X ships. Hang on.
You say if a lock on is lost to a second gen ship. Okay, I'm sorry. I read it wrong.
Oh, okay.
I read it wrong. I thought it was from, not to. I read that wrong. Sorry. Now, that's a neat rule. This is always the difficulty with this kind of rule because remember, this is a physical game.
Yes.
That requires that the person who cloaked do two things. One,
record everything keep a record of where they're at. Now, that's not the first rule that had totally hidden cloak. In fact,
that is correct.
Remember that they had hidden cloak as an option in Commander's Edition.
Yep.
And also, the Soldra have their phase shift device or phase dimension device that is hidden cloak. Okay. So, obviously, it, on the client, it's easy enough to do. And the reason I did that is because cloak has always been one of those things where it's almost impossible. Who uses cloak? It's really not a usable system.
Well, it's a usable system as it stands. It's just, and if you ever, I'm not sure if you remember reading the rule, but one of the things that it mentions in the hidden movement rule itself, and that is that cloak is, that ship is now worth 33% more than it previously was.
Yes. Yes.
So there's a huge...
Right.
It's considered very, very, very valuable. Because because in theory, even when it's completely hidden cloak, it's not completely off the radar in that you can kind of do pinging every so often. And so you get an idea of bearing of the ship.
Right. I'm saying you can't even do that.
Oh, understood.
It's gone. Now, having said that, I've also put in there a clock, and maybe that clock is too generous, but if you stay under cloak, you do several. It runs up your heat, and then you cannot dissipate heat while you're under cloak. That's the key part. So that's your time limit. And so you generate take so much power to cloak, and then the cloak is based on like for Cruiser, I think I said 5 points of power base, and then for every 4 points of warp power, you add another point of power cloak.
Right,
But every point of power generates a point of heat. And since you can't dissipate it while you're cloaked,
right.
you run out of capacity. There's your clock.
Right.
At that point, once you run out of capacity, you can't generate any more power. And down comes the cloak. Now, if you wait too long, here's the other thing. If you wait too long, and you're almost out of capacity. Remember, you dissipate heat at the end of the turn, so you could start the turn with and not be able to generate. If I say, okay, I'm decloaking at the beginning of the turn, but you don't dissipate and you don't have enough capacity, you might be in a situation where I cannot generate much power that turn because I just don't have the capacity. Sure, you get a lot back at the end of the turn, but that's a whole turn that you decloaked and you had very little power. So you only have like two or three. I want to make it so you only have like two or three turns under cloak with a little bit of movement, and then it's like, okay, now I got a surface.
Understood. Yeah, that I was just recalling, just reviewing that part of it, which was the use of heat, and that was definitely one thing that I disagreed with, which is that all previously, power was generated, and you didn't have to worry about the heat. Now,
Right.
when power for second generation, that power mechanism, in addition to generating power, also generates heat, and there's no way to avoid generating
Yes.
heat.
Correct. But and the reason I put that mechanism in there was it kind of gives you it gives you engine doubling. I gave you engine doubling.
Right.
And it unlike the Orion engine doubling, you can get your doubled engines back.
Right. Yeah, but as I think I've mentioned before, I think that kind of mechanism doesn't make sense to me. To me, it makes sense in the case of, okay, if you normally generate this much energy, one for one, the one box of warp power, one box of warp is one produces one box of power, and then if you
Right.
do that, it doesn't generate any heat. But if you want to double it, if you want to exceed that, i.e. kind of put the Starship in turbo mode, then it would generate
Yeah.
heat. To me,
Well,
that makes sense in that it's congruent with the past of the ships, because that could be a reason why they didn't want to do it before. Because one, the engines couldn't take the stress of basically turbocharging them, and in the case of the Orions, it could take stress to for a limited amount of time, but it was breaking down, it was
Yeah.
falling apart basically. When you did that,
Right.
and but with the second generation next ships, you could double it, but the only bad part about it was the generation of heat at that point. In which case you were
Yeah.
limited about how long you could do that, but you weren't actually damaging the ship.
Well, at the second generation, for example, the FedEx XCC, the second generation ship created in that one supplement back in the 80s.
Yeah.
It had 40 warp and probably about 10 more impulse and APR. Mm-hmm. So it had about 50 power.
Right.
So I said, okay, this ship can generate 50 power per turn forever.
Right.
But it can go over that or under that.
Yeah, but
that was the whole.
Right, but the mechanism.
And the more you go under it, the more you go under your total max, your dissipation, the faster you can get it back. So you could generate a lot more energy if you need it, but you're gonna reduce your capabilities later. And if I say, hey, I'm not gonna use it all now, then I can gain back some lost capacity.
Yeah, Chris, that was what Barry's referring to is the second generation X-ship module. That was the module X2 is what he's referring to, which was
published in 83.
Published.
And
right. But it was not good. And
no.
And ADB said that, oh, yeah,
broken.
This might not be, yeah, there was an X2 published. Back in the day, there was an X2 published. It was really bad. ADB even said as part of it, saying that, you know, we know this is not perfect, but we will improve it in the upcoming years.
And we will revisit this real soon now.
Right. And real soon
and
now,
it never did.
Never occurred. And I'm sure part of that itself was just that, you know, ADB and Task Force Games had the whole issue with basically not making money. And then finally, you'll ADB buying out the publishing rights from Task Force Games. And even, for the most part, buying out Task Force Games completely. You know, because who was it? I think it was Steve Cole that mentioned this, which basically Task Force Games was being run out of a locker, is what, at that point. You know, he had a locker full of games, and then if they sold a game, they'd actually take it out of the locker and they'd sell it, if you wanted it. And ADB basically inherited all that product. You know, and even the I'm pretty sure some of those products weren't even products that ADB actually created themselves. If I recall correctly. So.
Oh, and that one may have been one of them. I don't know. It was obviously never play tested, or at least.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
I mean,
come on. Now, this was 82, which I'm not sure what was running through their brains at that point, to be honest.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry, 83. Because 83, which was interesting, because that's the year before I graduated high school. And I didn't find out about SFB until 80, I forget, was it 84 or 85? I forget, it was freshman year or sophomore year. I think it was freshman year. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was freshman year with
high school?
No, not high school, college. It was sophomore year, so that was my third year at Drexel. Because that'd be pre-junior.
That would have been junior.
Pre-junior.
Oh, okay. You were at a five-year program?
Five-year program, yep. Today, Drexel University had co-op.
Oh, okay.
So, I remember we were playing SFB in Calhoun Hall,
mm-hmm.
which was, because my sophomore year, or half year, because we had trimesters, I was in the International House is where they put us up. They Drexel rented out a floor in the International House and placed everyone there, the sophomores, because they were low men on the totem pole because of too many freshmen decided they wanted to actually live at college, and they get first dibs. It goes freshmen and then seniors and then all the way down to sophomores being the last. So, and the only reason probably the only reason I even got a room was because I was out of town. Versus a person who could, in theory, commute. Because even I still remember with Drexel, if you even if you could commute and you want to live on campus for the first year, and you have the money, fine, you can do it. And to be honest, when it comes to the college, anyone who goes to college, anyone who has their kids go to college, to me, having the whole thing about you actually, your kid, are you living at college away from your parents, able to focus? Well, you have the social aspect, but also allows you to focus on work. You're right there where all the resources are. Now, same time, that thing is that part of it. The resources has changed. To us, the resources were like the library, where you actually could get physical books.
Right.
These days, you might not the that might that resource might not be the physical, though there are obviously there's still programs that rely on physical things like, oh, chemistry is it's a physical science. Physics is a
Yeah, you
it's a
need
physical
labs.
science. Those are
Yeah.
those things that are require you to do physical experiments against physical things that you can't get away with. In that case, that was always the one thing that I thought really sucks for the commuters, is because if you wanted to get a team together, everyone getting together just to study together, a study group. The commuters, they basically have to leave at around 10 o'clock or so they can get home, get some sleep, and then they have to drive back in. Versus the
Yeah.
people who actually lived on campus, you have a okay, you study, you stay at maybe 11. You wake up wake up a little bit early. You go down for your exam. You walk down for your exam, and you're there, and you take your
Oh yeah.
exam. Which was a heck of a lot easier. So, always
We had a path between the freshman dorms and the classrooms. And when people went for their freshman exams or F tests, as they called them, they called the trail that you'd see the freshmen all walking down this path. And they called it the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Understood, yeah.
They RPI, they designed the F test. They intentionally failed out between a quarter and a third of the freshman class. Set it up deliberately so they'd last the whole freshman year, at the end of the freshman year, a quarter or a third, and then would be gone, and they
And
would
this is
not make it to
RPI,
sophomores.
right? Is it?
Yeah. That
Well,
was the big filter.
I'm glad
Because it
I.
was real cheap to
Yeah, oh yeah.
real cheap to keep the freshmen, because they had the large, basically the large lecture halls, and then teaching assistants for individual recitation. So they had that mechanism down to extract the money.
I'm glad I did not make it into RPI. That's one of the colleges I actually submitted, to go to, because it was that one. I had Baltimore County, which actually I got accepted. University of Maryland, Baltimore County, right near where I live. I would
Yeah.
have been a commuter. Drexel University, and I put in my paperwork also to Carnegie.
My three schools that I put in for were MIT, RPI, and Purdue.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't make it to MIT.
Yeah. To me, come on, I was comp sci. Everybody everybody wanted to go to Carnegie Mellon. That's where all you know, Comp Sci was. That was the focus of Comp Sci, was Carnegie Mellon. That's why I wanted to go there. But they didn't do so good. Though
RPI actually graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
What I was going to say is
RPI actually graduated more physics majors than any other college in the country.
That was not surprised me. Yeah, I got the what was it? They came down for a introductory session. This is a college for Rensselaer, not Rensselaer, Rochester, RIT, Rochester yeah. Institute of Technology.
RIT, yeah.
And when they told me that the average 103 inches of snow a year, I went, okay, X that one off my list. Because I enjoy snow.
Well, RPI wasn't far behind them.
Yep, but that's a little different. They're more prestigious.
Oh, okay, yeah. But I remember one time when I opened the dorm room door, and it's like, I'm not getting out. And we went back. It was a three-floor building. We went up to the second floor and jumped out the window because the snow was high enough. That was the only way to get out of the building. They did not cancel classes that day. Yeah, but that was a drift that had just drifted up against the door.
Oh, yeah.
But it was 3 to 4 feet that it dropped that night.
Right.
Damn. I had classes that day.
Understood.
Well, for me, it was a walk to campus. I'm thinking, oh my God, the poor professors.
Yep, agreed. Don't get me started on that stuff.
A 90-year-old Professor McKinley walked 5 miles to teach his class.
Dang.
He was a tough old bird.
That's even if you're doing pretty good, which is 15-minute miles. That's a couple hours, and if it's snow, you're not making no 15-minute miles.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm getting back to these rules, which are interesting. Obviously the. One of the cruxes of this is that, as you pointed out, heat is the limiting factor when it comes to the cloaking. Now, this assumes that the heat and the power generation works like you originally wrote it up to be. Which is, no matter if you generate 1 point of energy or 10 points of energy, you're producing heat.
Right. 1 point of heat per power for each point of power, you get 1 point of heat, and you only have so much heat capacity before you run out.
Right. But the point being that. That it assumes that you're always generating heat, which, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, that I think that's kind of crazy and incongruent with the current ways of the SFB ships work. And it's, but there's that big assumption there. Now, given that the cloaks can't dissipate heat while they're cloaked. And since that's the limiting factor, basically, you have to keep your rules and not modify them. Because if we were to modify them so that the heat was only generated for amount of power that you generate exceeding the normal 1-to-1 ratio of one box of power to producing 1 point of energy.
Yeah,
for that adjustment, that'd be a little different. Obviously, you could still, in theory, do it.
Well, for example, I don't know if anybody else has been reading the rules, but just for other people, so for your typical tournament cruiser, I said heat dissipation is 50 points of power per turn, which is slightly higher, but not a heck of a lot higher than the amount of heat of power that a standard tournament cruiser can produce. So it's got more power, but just not that much more. It's not God power. But then I said you could double your engines, so you can go over that 50 for a little while until you run out of capacity. Not careful, you could really, because you dissipate at the end of a turn, you could be, you'd have the 50 points of the following turn.
But okay.
And if you go under that 50, then on a later turn, you gain back that capacity.
I was gonna say that
But
if.
what I wanted to do was give you more capabilities without adding extra boxes.
Oh,
Now
understood.
you have.
Barry, I totally understand, and I agree with the concept. I agree with
Yeah, it's just a matter of.
I agree there, Chris. Well, maybe not too much. Chris has just mentioned that he thinks that the heat dissipation rules add a lot of bookkeeping. And I tend to agree with that. It's some additional bookkeeping that has to be done. I don't think it's that much bookkeeping, but I agree that it means that you have one more additional thing, additional thing that complicates the rules, or more to the point, the tactical situation and evaluating the tactical situation.
It's one line in your energy allocation form.
Understood. And as I said, I don't think it adds that much complication, but it adds additional complexity to
It does. It does.
when you're trying to calculate the tactical situation and what you should do, how much speed you should actually do, because now it's not just a flat out okay speed for power, i.e. how much you put speed, and then okay how much you put the shields, how much you put the weapons, or you can do a reverse calculation: how much you want to put the weapons, how much you want to put the shields, and whatever's left over, you dump the speed. But obviously, you want to do it the front way because you want to know what your tactical situation to begin with. And the thing is, you're already balancing when it comes. Currently, the balancing mechanism is purely based on the energy that you can produce and energy that you have available to use. That is what the current mechanism is. Now, by adding
Yes.
heat dissipation and heat
Yes.
tracking, adds additional level to it because of
Right.
you can't you gotta make sure that during a turn you don't generate more heat than you're actually able to absorb.
Correct.
So, given that fact, that adds that additional complexity to the thinking of the tactical situation. So it's not just energy that you have to think about; you have to think about heat. Because Lord
Right,
knows.
right. So it gives you, it's like, okay, do I want to generate that power? How badly do I need it? The other thing to keep in mind is that you can generate power mid-turn, but you can only use the power you generate mid-turn to recharge batteries, which can then be turned around and used, or to charge phaser capacitors. Because, for example, I did not increase the size of the phaser capacitors. I backed that one out. So a phaser one still has a capacitor one, but you can recharge that capacitor mid-turn, and the phaser can fire a second time that turn. And the batteries, you cannot recharge them. When you discharge a battery, and you cannot recharge that same battery for four impulses, I think it was.
That is possible.
And I think, and that was tied into the shield regeneration, where you could only use battery power for shield. Sorry, for shield. Not regeneration, but reinforcement. You can only use battery power for reinforcement, but you could use the, you had 5-point batteries. No. You didn't have 5-point bat. I don't think I gave it 5-point batteries. They're 1-point batteries, but they're rechargeable several times a turn.
Right. Yeah, because I'm just trying to imagine even trying to run an Andromeda and that it's a second generation next ship, because that would not work at all.
I didn't even anticipate using that. I figured that Andromedas were second generation already.
Yeah, because
If you think about it.
right, well, obviously they can't generate more power than the number of boxes they have on the ship. So they never have to worry about the heat issue. But even without the heat issue, Andromedas are they're always constantly, and I do mean constantly, thinking about your batteries, how much energy you have in your batteries, how much energy you can draw out of your PA panels to put in your batteries, because you need the power in the power in the batteries to be able to continue doing what you're doing, because in overall the Andromedans don't have enough power. They need a lot more power to run everything that they want to run than they have. So they're
Right.
constantly draining their batteries, constantly.
Yes. Now I gave second generation ships much more flexibility in terms of midterm speed changes, and that's done with batteries.
Right.
And then you can recharge those batteries, which makes it means that you can actually, that's one of the purposes of being able to gen, and of course, so now I have you, that's another reason why you might not want you each power generation box can generate up to 2 points of power per turn, but you may want to leave some of that power ungenerated, and then as you need it, you can generate it to recharge things.
So it's basically it's turning power generation into the almost the ultimate batteries.
Yes.
The only thing
But you can
the
only get a little at a
right, the
time.
only thing the batteries are then good for is what they're used for on in FedCom. Because in
You
FedCom,
mean
yeah, with FedCom,
they're just used for limiting how much reinforcement you can do.
Wrong. That's one of them. But the more important thing is that it limits how it allows you to bring forward unused energy from the previous turn.
Yes.
And that's what this second generation, your second generation rules are saying, which is, just can you charge up the batteries now? If you don't have to pre-allocate all your energy that you're producing or can possibly produce. You can just say, okay, well, yeah, Andrew's due rule, Dave. And have it so that later on, instead of using batteries to do reinforcement, you just crank up the energy generation, and boom, you got more reinforcement. Michigan?
Now here I said that reinf I think I specifically said reinforcement specifically has to come out of the batteries.
Okay. Okay, it's not part of the battery system's rules. Okay, which means it's probably
No, it's part of the
power system.
shield rules.
A part of the shield rules.
Yes.
Okay, right. Right. Oh yeah, we saw the outer shield. Only battery power can be used to reinforce outer shields. However, and the other impulse. Okay, well, again.
There's a reason I did that.
Well,
And the reason I did that is that.
hold on. I'm just reading. Okay, just catch, make sure I don't miss something. Because currently, my understanding, and I didn't read this explicitly yet, which is you can reinforce both the outer and the inner shields. Correct?
Right. I think so.
And
Yeah, I'm not looking at it right now, so I remember what I wrote. I
right.
think the outer shields can only be reinforced by battery power.
Right. And that's what I was going to get to, is that the outer shields, yeah, Chris, it's something like a juggernaut, but not quite. The outer shields they require the use of batteries for reinforcement, but he said nothing about the inner shields, which means
Right.
you can still do reinforcement from unallocated generated power for inner shield reinforcement.
I guess you're right,
Yeah, because
which is
you.
fine by me, because and the reason I say because is outer shields effectively your reinforcement counts twice.
Right. Which then I can understand that. The whole idea of basically, again, incorporating the whole idea of what FedCom uses, which is limiting the amount of reinforcement based on the amount of power that you have in the batteries. Or a certain number of batteries. So that makes complete sense. And and obviously, as one of those people that I thinks that FedCom in some cases got it right where SAB got it wrong,
Yes, that's one of the things I
I
saw in the Fed comments that I said, yes.
Right.
It got because they were looking at Star Castling and they didn't want to do that.
Yeah, well, it brings forward and really accentuates and focuses when it comes, in my case, I think with FedCom, is that speed is life. We've always, in SFB, we've always said that. Because for us, what's the one thing that speed gives you? It gives you initiative. So you can.
Right.
You get to move last. Obviously, the only time you don't get to move last is when you have your opponent star castling. Because if I recall correctly, tack is ha happens after movement, after normal directional movement.
Correct.
So, which means they get the ultimate initiative at that point.
Yes.
Which is what which defeats the whole concept of speed is life. You know?
Yes.
So I think.
And then you get to have, then use all that power that you didn't use for movement, you get to use for reinforcement,
Right,
which is the
and that's
whole
one.
problem with Star Castling.
Right, and that's one of those things that's really great about FedCom, and that is that
Yeah.
it truly backs it up. That speed is life, and if you stop, you will die. Because you only get so, you're limited in the amount of power you can actually put towards a single volley based on the amount, number of undamaged battery boxes that you got.
Right.
So that is basically it's congruent with that whole philosophy of that speed is life.
Yes.
And penalizes the person who decides just to stop. Now, obviously there are points in some games where you have to stop because you don't have the power. But at that point, there's a good reason, because that means that most probably you're not going to have the amount of power anyway to reinforce your shields anyway. So that your best thing to do is actually stop at that point. Mm-hmm. And go defensive because of you don't have the power to run away from your opponent, even if you're not going to be possibly even to the point where you won't be able to move fast enough to run away from your opponent. At that point, you're only...
Well, the other time to do that is it's put all power to weapons.
Well, the only reason you want to put all your power to weapons and sit still is when you go into a purely defensive posture. When you don't have...
Or a pure offensive posture. I'm range one away from him on a down shield, and I've got disruptors.
Right.
Throwing everything into phasers and disruptors and say...
Yeah, but at the same time, Barry, why would you stop? In FedCom, because in FedCom,
only if you have,
what you do, you go speed, you go like speed 16 or maybe speed 8, depends upon what you want to do as your base speed, and then you can either cancel both those. Like if you go speed 16, you want to stay still, fine, cancel those two movements, and then you don't move.
Yeah,
but that's completely temporary, and then boom, off your sprint off and. And you're not stuck.
Yep.
You know, waiting.
Not
for
only that, but you cancel your movements. You still get to fulfill turn mode.
Yep.
Which is nice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
now I don't know if you saw this. Onto another topic. I left Phaser 2s in play. Second generation ships have phaser 2s.
Yeah.
I did not upgrade them all to phaser 1s.
Yeah, I noticed the last time with phasers, I could have sworn anyway.
No, it was this time. I specifically said that. No, phaser 2s. But I said, okay, there's a reason you want phaser 2s, though. They take less power.
Right.
0.75 point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was it? Phasers, yeah, here it is. Yeah, phaser 2s are still phaser 2s. Of course, usually by the time that you get the first generation X ships, most phaser 2s have been replaced with phaser 1s.
I'm in the tournament cruisers.
Oh, understood. But again, you're thinking purely tournament. And
right.
When it comes to rules like this, you're not playing this tournament. And Lord knows,
yeah, I know.
As you missed it, because you weren't here for the news portion, and I have not done that for a long, long time. Previously, for those of you who want a little bit of history when it comes to the podcast, for those who have not been with me from the very beginning, which is, I'm not sure how many people are still listening to that were with me at the very beginning. At the very beginning of this podcast, I used to have it so for the first 5 to 15 minutes was just the news portion, and I actually would record it live instead of what I do now. Because what I do now is I pre-record it, and then after we do the live portion, I then attach that onto the beginning part of the whole podcast. So you get the news portion, and then we go on to the normal part of the podcast. And I've been doing that for many, many years now. But before it didn't.
I hate to say this, but I got a 5 a.m. wake up.
Understood.
So I need to get going.
Okay, Barry. You have a good night.
Good night.
Okay. Briefly. Yeah. That was briefly. Well, he said, he told me, if you want me to, I can bring up the text message that he sent me. And he said, oh, I'll be there, but I'll only be there briefly. And it's like, okay, that, to me, briefly means like 20 minutes. An hour later, well, almost 40 minutes later. Well, given that, I still have a little bit of time, and I will get back to it. I'll extend the podcast maybe a little bit longer than I normally would to complete the whole idea of play by email and doing not doing electronically because it's already electronic, it's dirty, but doing it so it's a completely automated system. In that, it's not just you're playing against another opponent and it's automated, you know, you guys playing. But the key part here, which I think, given today's culture, let's say culture at the moment. I think that might be. I'm not quite sure that's the correct word I'm looking for, but I think it's close enough to say I'll use that one, and that is that. We like the idea of having our phones, you know, these little fondle slabs. And so that any time that we have some downtime, you know, we're bored and we're waiting in line, you know, which, to be honest, there's worse things than being bored. And I'm not gonna go down that road, because I can go on a whole big rant about how we've made ourselves way too busy, and really need to spend some time alone, away from the whole craziness called life. You know, the whole idea of spending a week. You know, I think sometimes some people really need just to go out, not necessarily camping, but out away from everything. You know, no fondle slabs, nothing like that. Closer to nature. I'm not saying you have to completely and utterly, you know, go camping and have nothing electronic with you. I'm not going there. Because I think that's a little rough, even for most people. But more to the point that the thing is with, you know, with the way we work, we spend some little bit of time. Now, how much time do we have? We've got, you know, active time to actually do something. You know, we're in the line. We might have anywhere between 2 and 5 minutes. That's if it's a long line, it'll be 5 minutes. The short line might be 2 minutes, maybe. I was going to say 30 seconds, but I don't think any line that you're actually going to pull out your phone for is shorter than 2 minutes long. Unless you just want to check your message real quick, that kind of thing. But when it comes to play, I can easily see that being a benefit for people where they can put down, okay, I want to do, Here's my orders. Do this, this, and this. Might take you, what, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, and then go sit. Then after you figure it out, you know, you then submit. It goes, it runs, and then at some point, some later point in the day, you know, whether it is, you know, I went from only 2 minutes. I got 10 minutes. So you submit it. It brings it back. automatically say, okay, this is what you did, this is what your opponent did, you know, and then brings it back, and then you can process it maybe immediately, maybe in half an hour, maybe a day later. You know, it gives you that time, that so you're no longer, when it comes to SFB or FedCom, I'm thinking FedCom to start off with, you have the ability to slow down, think things through, because I know that people like me, older, don't, or even some younger people, don't always have to have the first person shoot 'em up, you know, action kind of thing. You know, they prefer more of contemplative type of game. Take you a while, you know, take your time to think, you know. Chris is asking, how long do you envision it taking for a PB? I'm about to get back to you. In my mind, almost immediately, depending upon how far you go with it, because of, as I started this podcast, originally, I didn't envision that first step, you know, where you basically, you go through an impulse, a little segment at a time, to that being what you wanted, you know, you actually wanted to have it so that it did that, you know, that you'd want it, that wouldn't be a viable product, that you'd want to actually have it so you can actually have multiple impulses and so forth. But then talking about it now, talking about, you know, these guys and so forth, I actually can actually imagine doing it that way. Have it's not even played by email per se. It's more of a playing against an opponent, you can do it slowly, one impulse at a time if you want. Right, exactly, Chris. Chris has mentioned, you know, and actually, I kind of actually imagine doing that. Oh, sorry, for those who are not in the chat room on Twitch, what Chris is saying is that because if it's only a minute or two, probably less, I envision people using it as an ad hoc live robot component. And I actually can see that. I can see that as an ad hoc live robot opponent. And have the ability to do this, you know, and the funny thing is that what this might need is something that I originally had envisioned as what I call SFU ships, which is basically taking FedCom and boiling it down further, and simplifying things greatly, and I'm thinking I would at first, if I was to do it, and I got other projects to do, though. At the same time, one of those projects is to get a robotic opponent, and as part of the robotic opponent, I've got some of the initial work has been done for that, you know, when it comes to movement as a seeking weapon, and things like that. That's been completed. Now, having it so that the robot player has a little more smarts, just a little bit, so, you know, it can at the very least implement all of the robot rules based, you know, that were published, actually including maybe the ones that I think, Chris, you sent me. I know. I know people really want a robot opponent, and that's one thing I have to implement. But the good thing about, you know, having it as a, maybe not a phone app, you know, but at the very least, the whole idea is to have a minimalistic implementation, you know, possibly even taking FedCom and simplifying it down some. You know, there's certain stuff that you leave, but certain stuff you'd remove. You know, as strange as that might sound, it's actually removing things from FedCom to make it simpler. I know it's kind of crazy. But doing that and having it so that you can actually play against a robot opponent, you know, in the AI, well, I'm not going to say AI because it's not an AI. A robot opponent, a computer opponent, let's put it that way. A computer opponent, and you can play it anywhere. You don't have to sit down in front of a desk. You know, you don't have to get on your desktop or a laptop or whatever to play. But it's more simplified interface than I currently have. And it's not the whole idea is that the game is designed not to play another person. It's designed to play a computer opponent, a robot opponent. And I think that would be great. You know, the question would be when it comes to simplifying it down, because here's the one thing that I've mentioned this before, and I'll mention it again, and I'll harp on this point. Because I think the one thing that FedCom did wrong, complicated too much. I understand that there's certain issues, and I do mean this. There's certain issues. Because of you went from SFB, you took those same, actually that thank you, Chris. I have to recheck Starmada SFU because I do like Starmada. I'm Starfleet Universe. I truly, truly, and I will need to double check it when it comes. It's been a while since I reread the rules for it, even in here's the one thing. I've got against Starmada. Yeah, that's the one I have an issue with. The Unity Edition. The only issue I have with the Unity Edition is that it says, oh, you can do it this way or you can do it this way. That drives me crazy. Because that was the beauty of, I understand that you want to give people options, and Lord knows, if you got what was the original version for Starmada, which had its issues, because actually I still remember the original Starmada. Was that the Admiralty Edition? I think it might have been the Admiralty Edition. Yeah, Admiralty. Okay, the Admiralty Edition. Yeah, don't give me the Nova. There's. That's one of those gaming systems I really wish I would love to been there and really sat down with Daniel Cast and gone through the rules and gone through the mechanisms and gone through this whole thing with him, because of the initial implementation, even though there are certain things that I think they were trying to do, but they did certain things unsuccessfully in the Admiralty Edition. One of the things is that they actually had shields. Not that they had shields. They had directional shields, which is kind of critical to SFB. But the problem is the weapons didn't quite work quite well against that kind of shielding. That's why they changed in the Nova Edition. The bad thing about the initial Admiralty Edition was the whole use of drones. Now, Chris, when it comes to your only issue being a Starmada is the movement system. part of what I loved about the MRT edition was the movement system. Now I agree that when it comes to the MRT edition and the way that got implemented, when it comes to the way it was thought through, when it comes to SF Starfleet Universe and how that really doesn't match the way Starfleet Universe works, i.e. the big thing, which is, of course, it was partially based on vector movement, i.e. that you could go faster and faster and faster and faster if you just kept on pushing the pedal to the metal. And based on your speed, you can turn or not. And you could have it so that you fly so fast, you cannot turn. Now, that concept is completely antithetical to the Starfleet universe itself. There's never a point where you actually go so fast that you cannot turn. Oh, I know, Chris, that in Unity, they got rid of it. They got rid of it. Actually, I'm not sure they got rid of it in Nova. But again, with Unity, there's also, you got two options. You can either do pre-plotted movement, or you can do the crazy, you know, you move, I move, you move, I move. And then there's the whole, okay, if I have twice as many ships as you, or maybe not quite twice as many ships as you, more like, if you have exactly twice as many, it works out fine, because basically, you move two ships, then he moves one, you move two, he moves one, you move two, he moves one. But if it's not quite, let's say it's then you move two, he moves one, you move two, he moves one, you move one, he moves one. You know, if you have five and he has three. That kind of thing, which is crazy. But anyway, so I'll take a look, see, Chris, when it comes to Star Model, because that might be a better way of doing this than FedCom. Now, that obviously would mean a complete and utter change when it comes to the robot player, because the robot player is based on FedCom. So I'd have to take a look, see at that. But I would want to reread Star Armada, because I read the actual core Star Armada Unity edition when it came out. Unfortunately, it came out, what, 3-4 years ago now? Big surprise. And of course, Chris, I forgot again. Yeah, Chris is saying that he made up his own system and he used a 10 impulse chart with it. And of course, that actually is very Star Armada like. That is, if you ever actually looked at the Star Armada rules, it's not really a single system for single background material. The whole idea is that you use Star Armada itself to build up your own universe. You know, you build up the weapons and so forth. And in theory, you can actually limit to what kind of weapons are available and how your movement's going to be done and things like that. And it's almost like a board game construction kit when it comes to tactical war games, to a certain degree. Obviously, it's simplified, so it doesn't go to the point of genericizing it, because Lord knows there's so many ways of doing movement, so many ways of limiting movement and tracking and all this kind of things. Because as I've mentioned before, you know, back when, it's been so long, was that when I was in college? I was in college. Yeah, I was still in college. They had a simplified game, which was called Silent Death, which was actually kind of interesting, kind of Newtonian vector kind of movement system, but it's not to that great degree, because what it did, it just used movement points. And you could do things based on the number of movement points that you had available to you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Chris, I noticed that there's a bunch of movement systems in the core rulebook. I did go through them all, and as I said, it's been a while since I've actually read the book, so I have to reread Starmada SFU, and that might actually do it. I actually have to double check. Oh, for those people, give me a sec here, because I happen to have a captain's log with me. So, hey, this would be a good one. Okay, actually one of my favorite ships. Dang. This is the Klingon B-10T, which is, I said, is one of my favorite ships. Emergency battleship. This is what, for those who actually are watching the video, this is what it looks like. Okay, let me see if I can get this right. Da-da-da. I think that might be better. Da-da-da. Give me a sec. Okay, there. So that gives you an idea of what the FedCom SSD looks like for the Unity Edition. I gotta reread how to do damage for this sucker. Because, you know, that's one thing they changed between, like, the Admiralty and the Nova Edition. They changed it, and it was goofed up. So, anyhow, I think I will definitely end the evening with that. I will actually, maybe this discussion might actually continue further. Maybe I'll continue on next week, and after I look at Starmada for a bit. Because there's another topic I want to get to, which requires a robot opponent to implement. And I like the idea, but I'm not going to talk about it quite yet. But it's on the brain. As I said, Three Moves Ahead inspired me about that. So, with that, I am Paul Franz at a bid. You a good night.